Welcome to Filmstrip. These podcasts are spoiler-filled as we discuss the plots, characters, and themes of the films in review. All content used or discussed in these podcast episodes is the property of the respective owners and used under the Fair Use Act, Section 504, C2, Title 17.
Welcome to Filmstrip. I'm Jay, and I'm happy to welcome a power trio of guests for this show. Welcome back to Filmstrip, Matt Bledsoe, the host of Film Feast Podcast. Matt?
Hello, Jay. How's it going? Thanks for having me back on. Excited to be here.
Absolutely. Glad to have you here. Also, everyone's podcast guest and self-professed Rambo fangirl, Carmelita Valdez-McCoy. Carmelita, what's up?
Hi, Jay. Hello, friends. Oh, Ruby wants to say hi, too, apparently.
And first-time guest, but long-time friend, Andy, the action movie guy and co-host of the Imperial Scum podcast. Andy, welcome to Filmstrip.
Hey, Jay, thank you for having me. Super excited to be here to talk Rambo and do my worst Stallone impersonation possible.
Oh, I promise you, you're going to be in a run for your money because I've gathered this merry band of podcast missionaries or mercenaries, I don't know, depending on the day, to talk about Rambo 2008, starring Sylvester Stallone, Julie Benz, Paul Schultz, Matthew Marsden, Graham McTavish, Tim Kang, Ray Gallegos, and Mong Mong King. Written by Art Mazzucchelli and Sylvester Stallone, directed by Sylvester Stallone, or as he says, directed by Rambo, released in 2008 on a $50 million budget, grossed over $113 million at the box office. I'm proud to say I was about 15 bucks of that, and quite possibly the bloodiest action movie I've ever seen released in a January. Now, this all started for us because I was listening to an episode of Film Feast, and I'll call out that where you all were on talking about Predator, and there became, like, as with most podcasts, you know, good side conversations and stuff. And I was like, I have got to get these three people on about something, but it's got to be something like outlandish. And I'm sitting there thinking in my head, like, I don't know, we've already done Demolition Man on the show. What can I do? I don't want to do something serious, you know? And I thought, Rambo 2008, this is the thing. And I tossed it to y'all, and you're all on board for that. So I want to get some background from you all on Rambo in general, Stallone, you know, whatever, and this movie. So Carmelita, I want to start with you though, because you are the self-professed fan of Rambo.
It's true. I'm like a rabid Rambo fan. People are kind of like, Rocky, Rambo, what's your Stallone franchise? And I do enjoy Rocky, and I have seen not all, but several of the Rocky films. But for me, it's Rambo, has always been Rambo ever since I was a little kid. I love it. Stallone as Rambo is like my long lost uncle. That's how I think of him. Like, because I grew up, my father's two elder brothers would come to visit, and we'd watch Rambo over and over and over again. More specifically, First Blood and First Blood Part 2. Love it. I don't care how many Rambo movies they make, if Last Blood ends up not being the last First Blood movie, I would be there in the theater. It makes me so happy. It just pulls at my heartstrings. I love the action. I love Stallone in this role. It's just amazing. And I'm so happy. So happy that we're talking about it. This is like a dream come true, honestly.
All right, Matt, what about you?
I'm not as big a Rambo fan as Carmelita. That seems like it's hard to beat. I do really like the series, though. The weird thing was, I saw Rambo 2008 second. So I saw First Blood. Wow. Yeah. I saw First Blood, didn't see 2 or 3, jumped to Rambo in the theater. So imagine the leap from where he is in First Blood to him in Rambo 2008. Me and a buddy, and I was reminiscing my friend about this because we're still friends. We still talk. And I'm talking about Rambo, the 08 one on a podcast. And he was like, oh, my God, that movie was so insane. Because it felt more like First Blood is so different than actually I think most of the series. But it felt like, I don't know, just felt very different. Like, we were sitting there, like, I remember being in the theater with him and, like, losing our minds. Like, we were like, like, just screaming, hands up, like, losing it at this, the crazy violence. Mm-hmm. Just going insane. That felt more like almost like my reintroduction to the Rambo franchise. And then it still took me a while to get around to 2 and 3. And then I did see Last Blood in a theater too. But I don't know if I'm a Rocky or Rambo person. It does feel like that's like the debate with Stallone. It's like, you Rocky or Rambo. I guess I would probably lean Rocky. Sorry, Carmelita. But Rambo's great. I mean, I think of the series, the only one I don't like that much is Part 3. And I don't think 3 is like a terrible, unwatchable movie. I just think it's like not as good as the rest of the series. So had a weird history with Rambo, but I do enjoy Rambo. I mean, action star shooting guns. I mean, that's cool. Guy shooting guns is like my bread and butter.
5 stars.
I mean, going from First Blood to this movie is like going from the original Halloween, skipping all of them, and going to 2018. I mean, this is the original Legacy sequel, if there was one, even though they don't totally ignore the middle ones, but they kind of did.
This is like a 78 Halloween to like Halloween or Halloween Kills. Because Kills is just full of violence.
Maybe it's more Kills. Yeah, there you go. Like,
it should be called Rambo Kills, I think. Right,
because he kills a lot. So, all right, Andy, what about you, man?
Okay. Saw this in the theater opening day because I was a big Rambo fan. Not as big as Carmelita, but not as good as Matt. So I'm right firmly in the middle there. And I will not pick between Rocky or Rambo, so don't even ask.
I choose to have chocolate and peanut butter in my religion. I don't know about the rest.
There you go. Yeah. Yep. Rambo and Rocky are the peanut butter cups of action movie franchises. So yes. Yep, best together. So I remember being probably 6 or 7, and my dad and his brothers were watching Rambo First Blood Part 2. And I came into the room when the mud wall eyes open up and I was like, what is this?
Yes.
And my dad was like, son, it's rated R, you gotta go. I was like, okay. And I pretended to leave, and I army crawled back in behind the like couch so I could watch it.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, when they all got up, they found me, and I was like a little in trouble, but you know, not too bad. And then I remember Part 3, we went to see Crocodile Dundee 2 at the drive-in, and I turned my head around and the screen behind me is playing Rambo 3. So I just watched that, even though I couldn't hear anything that was happening. Loved it. And then I went back after seeing those two when I was a little bit older and watched Rambo First Blood. And I was like, what is this? This is super serious. This is almost like an anti-Rambo movie. So I was like, strange. And then, you know, this one came out and I went with my buds and we were just like, all right, it's cool to see Rambo. Sylvester Stallone had his string of kind of not so good stuff, you know, and he was kind of like, is he still there? And man, did this movie blow us away. We were probably like Matt, we were hooting and hollering, which I didn't think I'd use the term hooting and hollering today, but I did. it's such a blast. And going back and rewatching it, because we'll get to it, man, I forget how just from the get-go how bloody and over the top and uncomfortable this movie is from the start. But yeah, so big Rambo fan. It's one of those tent poles. If you like action movies, you're gonna like Rambo. I mean, it's there, it's in that DNA, especially probably Part 2 is where it becomes a true 80s action franchise. And then that, it's just nuts. Like 3, I still love 3 because, I mean, he literally drop kicks somebody down a hole that's tied up to a rope, and then the guy blows up. It's like, mean, and Matt, when you said 3 is your least favorite, I was like, you did see the last one, right? Where it's like literally the only good part is the Home Alone Rambo scene.
Know. And I other liked, than I that, it's the last not one. That great.
3 is actually my least favorite, too. I would say I might never watch 3 again.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay.
Well, wow. Wow.
I will gladly
fine.
All right. I will be the torchbearer that 3 is not that bad.
No, please do. Someone needs
to do that.
Yeah. Look, I think I'm the only person in this podcast that saw all of these in order, not in theaters, but I remember seeing First Blood. I grew up in this very interesting household where I had strict parents, but they didn't care what we watched and would watch stuff with us. So my dad rented First Blood and my brother and I watched it, and because we were like, oh, Rocky as a war guy, you know, and we watched it. And but I remember thinking like, oh god, this is not what I thought, you know. And years later I ended up reading the book that Dave Morrell wrote and got a lot more background on it. I was like, oh, this is like a really, you know, neat tragic tale, you know, all this stuff, and just how that movie came together is kind of neat. And then you know, I saw part two like every other, you know, kid on the playground, because it was like the thing everybody was talking about, right? So it was one of those rentals, you watch it, and it was, and then I remember when Rambo was an actual Saturday cartoon. I may be the only person to remember that, but yeah, that was that was like, wow, I'm not really sure that was the mode to go for, even as a kid. I was like, I don't know, we can, like, you know, Transformers, sure. Rambo's not exactly in the G.I. Joe land of miss everything all the time, but anyway, so I saw that. I saw three, and I remember when I saw three, I was like, I don't get it. And years later, I was like, oh, no, I do. And it's really kind of complicated. So I thought, well, three's done. Like, they'll never do another one. Him and Troutman ride off into the desert together, you know, at the end of that. And then I found out they were going to do this. And it was, and I thought, ah, oh, you know, Stallone, Rocky Balboa was a massive hit. It was a great return to the franchise. I don't blame him. Sure, let's go back and do John Rambo, you know, or whatever. And he specifically didn't want to title it that because of this, which I think was neat. He's like, no, I didn't want it to feel like it was the last one, because I felt like in pure Stallone parlance, like, you know, he could go on forever. And I'm like, well, yeah, he's full of enough chemicals, he probably can. And so, you know, they're going to keep going with it. And so I remember dragging my wife, they're not dragging so much, it's like, hey, there's a new Rambo flick, let's go. It was like a Saturday matinee. And she's like, okay, sure. And I think like she was sort of tertiarily aware of Rambo, but that's not really her scene. So we went, and the whole time when all the carnage is happening, and this is her general reaction to ultraviolence, my wife is cackling her head off. She laughs constantly. She's laughing through this whole thing, and to the point that a couple of people I remember turn around like, this chick is psycho. So, and I was like, this is why we were married. So anyway, it's good memories for me. I remember seeing this, and then again, I think I bought the DVD when it came out in like some, you know, $3.99 bin or something like that, when the Blockbusters were closing down, or maybe even the movie galleries going way back. But I remember hanging on to it and have seen it a bunch. And then when Last Blood came out, I watched it and I was like, okay, well, that's an interesting way. I hope that's not how it ends, because it's kind of like, you know, your favorite band puts out an album, you're like, that's going to be it. That's the last thing they've done. Well, I hate that. So I didn't hate it, but I'm like,
same.
You know, it bothers me that Van Halen's numbered albums, that they ended with three. And that's nothing against Gary Cherone, but that album is garbage. And so, you know, that's the legacy. It's kind of like, maybe we can do something a little bit better. So, but I've always liked this franchise. I think it's a lot of fun. And again, it's one of those movies that is the epitome of, I don't want to say turn your brain off, but it's one of those just like, just go with it, just roll out. It's like everything that Michael Bay asks you to do in a movie, not name, painting game, and everything that any, you know, great action film will let you go on the ride for, you know. And if you want to, there's some subtext in there and you can have some fun with that. But generally, Stallone, like, this script and to hear it told by the guys on the set, is that the other guy wrote the outline and Stallone every day was new pages, was rewriting things. But it turned out for the better, because if the one thing the man can do is write, like, he understands scripting, he understands pacing, and this movie at no time is ever boring. And I'm like, you know, I kind of feel like Rambo 2008 is like Group of Five football. You can win and be boring, and you can be fun and win, which is the ultimate thing. But what you can't be is lose and be boring. And this movie knew, like, we can't be boring. We can't be too serious. We're just going to go with it. So let's just get some mega white church missionaries in a place they shouldn't be, and all hell breaks loose, and give Rambo some, you know, real enemies that no one on the earth could ever possibly root for. And then we'll give them even more reason not to ever be able to root for them. And then we'll just let the carnage happen. And so I'm one of those, again, like I say, I'm not going to choose between my Stallone franchises, because I think they're all fun. But this was a big return to form for him. And it really got him, I think, back into the first spotlight, because people were blown away with how good this was, too. And in addition, how much fun it was.
I was going to say, because this is 2 years after Rocky Balboa. Is that right?
Yeah, okay, roughly.
So, yeah, he feels like he's like making a comeback, because like the late 90s or 2000s were not kind to him.
No.
So, yeah. And this, yeah, I, you know, it's all on a whim. I guess to start with, the violence is, I remembered this being violent, and it somehow surpassed my memory of how violent it was. Because I'd seen it multiple times. It's not like I hadn't seen it since 08. I had seen it, and I had like, there were like major like blind spots in this movie. Like, I forgot about that like village massacre that happens where they're just murdering children, which most movies do not cross that line, or they they show it off screen, or they apply it's off screen. He's just like having children be stabbed with bayonets. A kid gets thrown into a fire. Mm-hmm. I was screaming like this. I'm like your wife, Jay. I scream at. I'm like yipping like a dog. I'm like, I just can't believe what's happening. I'm not like excited about that kind of thing. Like, I'm just like shocked to like that he went there with it. Which does make me want to see the bad guys get killed so badly, because they are just some of the worst bad guys you could ever imagine. Like, and they should get like, and listen, hashtag hound for justice. I would, the justice juices were flowing, and then they get killed in such spectacular ways. Like, and they deserve it. Like they like are just the worst people you've ever seen doing heinous things. And I just, I mean, it's a very simple structure. Like you said, it's the structure is like, he did not overcomplicate this. People go and play shouldn't be. Rambo's got to get involved, kill a bunch of people.
Yep.
We're done. Well, that's it.
I have to jump in with the Rambo cartoon. Yeah. Young Andy did not go anywhere without his Rambo action figure as well. I had that.
Yes. Nice.
Like telling all of my friends, I'm like, Rambo cartoon rules. They're like, sure it does. And I'm like, there's also a RoboCop cartoon, guys.
Yes.
Like, remember when R-rated movies got cartoons?
Got toys.
You couldn't market anything to kids in the 80s.
Reagan took those chains off.
It's the one good thing Reagan did.
Yeah, Reagan took the chains off the cabinet.
Deregulate those cartoons.
Well, I've got something a little fun for our plot summary here, gang. So let's just let it roll.
Hey, everybody, this is Sylvester Stallone, and I'm talking on behalf of my good friend Jay. He asked me to come on and do a special appearance on the podcast, and what can I say? I'm in my trailer on the set of my hit Paramount Plus show, The Tulsa King. I know it's a hit show because they tell me almost 2,000 people watch it every day. That's pretty good for these days, I guess. You know, I don't know. I'm an old school guy. I think Paramount's on cable, but what do I know? Anyway, he wanted me to talk about this. So I'm going to tell you the plot to my great movie, Rambo. Rambo, played by me, living his best life in Thailand, wrangling snakes and rolling down the river CCR style on his rickety boat. Enter a group of missionaries from Colorado who need a ride into war-torn Burma with some Band-Aids and New Testaments. Rambo's all hard pass until the leader's hot blonde fiancé throws him some puppy dog eyes. Kind of giving this whole sexy vampire thing, too, you know. I'm Catholic, so I kind of like got a thing for supernatural monsters. These missionaries, bless their naive hearts. They think Rambo's a glorified Uber driver until things go south faster than a flock of geese on ice, you know? That's pretty fast. Yo, geese can fly, but if they're on ice, they're even faster. Turns out, Burma's not exactly on the chill vibes travel brochure. Enter a hilariously sadistic Burmese commander who couldn't win a staring contest against a houseplant. He captures the missionaries, and Rambo, feeling this weird mix of guilt and boredom, decides to bust them out. He's joined by a ragtag group of mercenaries hired by the pastor of the mega white mega church, who are basically Rambo wannabes. You know, not as good as me, but they want to be like me. You know, like so many people do. Arnie, I'm looking right at you. They're all mullets and muscle, but they got the tactical skills of a confused squirrel. And, you know, squirrels are not very tactical. Everybody knows that. They're the least tactical of the animals. They head into Burma for a rescue mission that goes about as smoothly as a greased pig wrestling competition. Or, if you think about my hit movie Rocky, try to catch the rooster. Running around trying to catch the rooster, it's kind of like that. Rambo was told to stay in the boat by the mercs, but like a true action hero slash action fiend, he joins them. When mercenaries keep getting blown up or captured, Rambo cleans up the mess like a babysitter after a sugar rush, you know? I'm lucky I never did none of those babysitting the kids movies, you know, like the Tooth Fairy with the Rock to Dwayne Johnson and all those. He uses misdirection techniques, sets off an old bomb MacGyver style. MacGyver had great hair, not as good as mine back in the day, but you know. In the end fight, when it looks like the mercs and missionaries are about to get executed, Rambo almost single-handedly dismantles the bad guy's operation with his trusty knife, an unlimited supply of 50 caliber ammo, and a late run-in by some Karen rebels. I don't know why he calls them Karens. They were pretty cool. You know, not like I want to see the manager. But he even takes the time to gut the sadistic leader with a sneer that Harrison Ford could sue me for. Some of the mercs survive. Most of the missionaries are saved, at least physically. I don't know about spiritually, you know. I can't speak for someone else's salvation like that. The bad guys are turned into minced meat, and Rambo decides to go back to his family's Arizona ranch as credits roll.
Thanks, Sly. Wow. Appreciate that.
Incredible. Incredible.
The flock of geese on ice. I'm never going to forget that one.
So many great sayings in that. Oh, man.
Oh, well, you know, that's a good way to sum it up as it goes. But yeah, there's a lot that goes down in this movie. And I think the thing that I had forgotten about it wasn't the violence and all the stuff, but was the opening news crawl where we have to give justification for why we're going to do this. Oh, yeah. Because Stallone rightfully decided, he's like, nobody knows where the hell Burma is. He's not wrong. No. So they don't know what the problem is and all that. So you have to give this atrocity. And you guys talked about it, Matt, you in particular, like the villains in this movie are like totally irredeemable. Like every now and then you come across a villain in a movie and you kind of like, you get where they're coming from on some level. Maybe you don't agree, but you know, I get it. You know, it's the ghost house in Amityville. Like, you know, get the hell out of my house. You know, all that stuff. Like, you want to get on their side. Margot Kidder's kind of annoying anyway, you know? And so, or Karen Allen, whoever it is, but you know, you feel all that, but this one, like, no, these people are like the scum of the planet of all things. And enter our hero, who's just kind of chilling out, catching snakes. I mean, I kept wanting him to cut to one of those Flintstones cartoons where the dinosaur goes, "It's a living."
Yeah. Just wrangling snakes, like just a simple life.
Right. But I do think it's neat, though, because I had forgotten this. I went back and looked at it. Rambo was in Thailand at the beginning of Rambo 3, and he presumably goes back. So this is in continuity. I know I called it like a legacy sequel, but it's, you know, really in continuity. Like, so I was like, no, we got to pick him back up where we left him 30 years ago.
I didn't realize that. So that, yeah, that's good to know. Yeah, that's like, he kept it. He kept the continuity. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, for Rambo 3. So he was in Thailand. So I guess having been pardoned from whatever the hell Rambo 2's James Cameron wet dream was of that movie and all those things. But yeah, no, I just think it's neat how they throw us right into this. And again, this movie wastes no time, you know, getting right in. But we also get that opening bit where they're making those people run across the rice paddies and they step on just random landmines. And I didn't know until now that the majority of that, y'all, is CGI. Like, the majority of the blood and the explosions and stuff is all CGI. They had apparently perfected that. And Stallone was like, yeah, you can test run it on this movie. And they, like, a lot of what you see is very CGI stuff. There's some meat, obviously. Yeah, it looks great, right?
Yeah.
I did notice it more this time. I don't know if it was watching it, like, in better quality on a better TV.
Yeah.
I did notice there was more CGI, like, bullet holes and blood than I remembered. Mm-hmm. Like at the time, I'd not remember. Like, so that's actually one of my, like, kind of, not a nitpick. There's so much violence, but there's like some stuff where, like, you see it, you're kind of like, oh, that looks a little too fake. But I mean, they couldn't use like squibs and practical because there's just so much happening. I think it'd be like impractical to, you know, get everybody with like blood packs and squibs. And so I did notice that way more of the time. Like, oh, they use a lot of CGI for like the blood and the limbs being cut off, and you know, it's not terrible. It's just like something that stood out to me more this time because I feel like I had either forgotten or didn't notice it much before. But it was interesting they used so much of it. And, oh wait, because that feels like early to be using that. I feel like I can't remember anyone using that before Rambo 08. So seen it more since. But yeah, just an observation this time watching. I was like, oh yeah, there's a lot of them. This
all the dismemberment stuff that's going on. There's a scene in Michael Mann's Miami Vice where these drug dealers, spoiler alert, shoot into a car of people.
Yeah.
Y'all know what I'm talking about? The way that those 50 cals just tear those people to pieces is very similar to the way some of this stuff goes down here too. And that's a mix of CGI and practical effect. Yeah. So what did y'all make though of the initial setup here though, where the missionaries come to get passage into Burma to aid the Karen rebels and stuff like that? Andy, you're shaking your head.
Oh, it's just one of those things where I'm like, it's like easy writing 101, because it's like, who's going to be coming in here? Well, not wealthy businessmen, not this or that, but, you know, idealistic, you know, missionaries, and which can play into Rambo's whole thing. He's like, you bringing in guns? And they're like, no. And he's like, then you ain't going to change nothing. You know, yes. So it just gives him a chance to get all these little platitudes out, and then kind of, you know, it just, it writes itself as it goes along. And you can, I mean, you could, like you said earlier, Sly is, I mean, the guy wrote some Oscar winning, or at least Oscar nominated scripts. So the guy knows how to write. And, mm-hmm. and when he's left in just super simplistic, like you said, hour and a half, like it's that sweet spot where I see that kind of runtime. I'm like, yes, I will see nothing. There will be no excess meat on these bones. It will just be what I need. And when I'm done, I could almost just hit play and watch it again in the time it takes to watch some movies once. So it's like, right. All right, sweet. But yeah, it's just, it's there. The actors do a pretty good job. And I like that Sly, when he was going, you know, called the one kind of lead missionary's fiance a vampire, because in the Buffy the Vampire yes. Slayer series, she was a vampire. Yes. And I remember Andy Darla. Saying that. I'd let Darla turn me, sure. And
who wouldn't among us that has seen that? So Darla was an interesting creation too, because she was supposed to be on one episode of Buffy, but everybody responded so well to her and to David Boreanaz that they're like, well, we got to bring her back and we got to make him a bigger part of the show. And that was like just the tale of how that, you know, imagine that, like nowadays shows seem like they're just planned out for, you know, years and years in advance, because it's all some math formula that the corporation's got or whatever. But back in those days, man, they were just screwing around Fox Studios going, I don't know, maybe Buffy should, like, you know, have a hard time at school this week. I don't know. You know, and just making shit up and bringing interesting people in. And then I think at this point she had been on Dexter, and Stallone loved Dexter. So that's how he got her. For this, he's like, I want the chick from Dexter. I love that you have the two versions of the missionaries, because the Michael character has been in country before. He talks about it. I'm like, you're a friggin' doctor. He's probably like a GP, you know, or whatever. And he's in Colorado, so whatever. He's probably doing pretty good for himself, but he's been in before, and, you know, he knows what to see. And it's like, Rambo, the way Rambo looks at him, just like, you ain't seen shit, playboy. but I love that the acts like he's so ready for all this stuff. But Sarah realizes, and everybody else here looks just scared out of their mind. And Sarah's like, we probably shouldn't be here, but this is what we have to do. So I'm going to, you know, stand by my mission here and get this guy on. And I love how she like wages this silent protest just sitting on the boat in the rain. Like, well, if I just sit out here, maybe won't kick me off into the river where there's tons of snakes and stuff. But yeah, so the one thing I'll say is that everybody in this cast gave a lot of energy, with one exception. The guy calling the snake wrestling could not have been more not interested in deadly cobra kill many people. It's just like, man, come on. Like, I've been a ring announcer. You got to put a little oomph into that, man. Like, imagine if Samantha Irvin was like, now you're new Intercontinental Champion. You know? Like,
is it a character choice where he's been doing the snakes thing so long, he's just bored, and is he just tired of it? Or is
that's
it
what I'm wondering. That's what I'm wondering. I mean, I don't know if that dude was an actor as much as a...
That's true. It might have been a guy that he found.
Thing. And the dude was just like, whatever, your movies suck. I saw Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, whatever.
Sly, I've been calling these snake matches for years, so I'm not going to be, my character would not be so enthused by it anymore. He's almost to the point where he's ready to just call it quits, but he hasn't found the right person to take over. So right. That's the kind of,
it's because his son is the lead snake fighter. So he's waiting for him to get bitten enough times that he finds like, okay, I'm taking the mic and done with this. Something's going on. I love that though. But we do get, and this is one thing that I didn't remember about this movie, were the flashbacks to First Blood and part two and part three. We're like, and I actually like that, because we think of Rambo the caricature as this just Terminator with flesh, right? Well, I guess Terminators have flesh, so that was a bad way of saying it, but you know, the Terminator human thing. But the real character, the First Blood story, the end of that, and Andy and I were talking about this offline, is Stallone is giving a hell of a performance when he breaks down at the end of that movie. And I mean, it's dark. There's a lot of stuff going on, and he really tried to encapsulate a lot of the PTSD that Vietnam vets felt and still deal with to this day. All the vets that you know, have come back and live with that. And the fact that that's still lingering for him 30 years later, I think is a neat character trait to include, because again, a lazier screenwriter would be like, hey, just skip all that. Just tell him to say, sure, they offer him enough money and he goes with it. You know,
It's not that crazy actually that Matt went from First Blood to Rambo. And it really isn't when you think about Rambo 4 in a lot of ways. Takes the psychological and the emotional, like, character elements of First Blood, and then it takes a lot of the settings and kind of like the like actiony plot stuff from First Blood Part 2, and it takes from both of those and it kind of moves the story along 30 years. Where is Rambo now? What has he been through? How has all these years of disappointments and frustrations and pain affected him? And now he's going to go do another mission that's very similar to the POW rescue in 2. And how does he grapple with that now as a middle-aged man who still has PTSD? I don't know. So it's actually like, I actually love that. Like, if you want to be that Rambo nerd that philosophizes and psychoanalyzes Rambo, you can do that with this movie. I think most people are not inclined to do that. You just want to watch him cut people down. And that's cool too. But it is there. Kind of those deeper character moments are there.
I think you get all of it on that boat ride up the river with the missionaries, because they're all sitting there talking and they're kind of having their, you know, coffee house political discussion and whatever. And Sarah keeps trying to talk to him, pay attention to him. And you can tell, you know, because she's the one that lays out that, no, he didn't take any money for this. He just decided to do it. That in her, he saw like, oh, there's actually people that still believe in the ideals in the world, you know, and I don't buy that. And I never will, you know, as what Rambo, but it's kind of neat to be around that. Like, you've been around somebody who is so into something and maybe it's not your thing, but like, I'm going to go along for the ride because you're having a good time. You know?
Yeah. The sincerity.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great word. Yeah.
And I think he's willing to put himself on the line to protect her because he sees how sincere she is.
Yeah. Totally. And in between that ride is when they cut to that village attack, Andy, you were talking about. And that was something I had forgotten, of how absolutely brutal this army faction is. They are insane.
Yeah. Heinous. It's truly heinous, vile.
It's like, that's part of just being the most violent, one of the most violent movies I've seen in a theater. I was like, how did this get an R rating? Like, right? I don't know if they're, I didn't read about like if he had to go back to the MPAA or anything, but it just seemed like, man, I cannot believe they let him have an R, because like the MPAA is big on like, I think, vibe and like who it's happening to with the tone of the violence. Like, the fact that they just, I must have blocked it out like for my own mental well-being.
Yeah, when you're bayoneting and throwing children into fire, yeah, like that was
when I brought my friend level. I was like, man, I've got the village thing. He goes, oh yeah, they put that kid in the fire. I was like, yeah, that part. I was like, how did I forget something that horrific happened? I was like, blowing Repressed my mind.
I think you did it on purpose.
I did do it on purpose.
Yeah,
I just remember all the cool Rambo stuff at the end. But yeah, it's that setup. Yeah, irredeemable is the right word, Jace, earlier. There's no coming back from, like, these guys kill them all. It's fine. Like,
Andy, you host a Star Wars themed podcast, and we all know the scene in Revenge of the Sith when Hayden Christensen turned around and was like, fuck them kids. imagine if we actually saw him chopping them down.
Oh, trust me. Yeah, I've had that thought in my head many times, because I'm like, oh, man, there's a part of me that's like, maybe he just let that kid sneak away. You know what I mean? No. But no, he didn't let that kid sneak away. Fuck those kids. Yeah. And this is from a guy who's got kids. So trust me, sometimes fuck those kids. but no, I like what Carmelita was saying about the script and how Sly writes it, because you're right. It is very in lesser hands. It could be just a balls to the wall action movie, but he does try to put a lot of thought into Rambo. There's a lot of things that go unsaid, and he actually could have given himself way more lines. Like, he, much like the first movie, Rambo doesn't say a whole lot in this. And when he does, it's very profound. Actually, it's not just like, you know, my favorite one later when we get to it, when we do our quotes or stuff like that, I've got a certain line that stood out to me this time more than before. But yeah, it's one of those things that Sly knows exactly how much to have Rambo say and how much is in his look and how he carries himself. Like when the mercenaries come on the boat, if we can jump ahead of that real quick, because could you find a more annoying band? There's like the one guy who's like cool. There's the one guy singing a song. I have no fucking idea what that song is. He's like,
it's one of his songs.
I was like,
a singer. That's one of his songs.
That's why I've never heard it before. So clearly, you know, I'm glad he gets mowed down. His song sucks. No, just but then you get Graham McTavish, who is a really cool actor, and like I think of him now in The Hobbit, which they're not perfect, but I still love his portrayal in that. And then he's just an asshole in this entire movie. Like, hey, boatman, make this go faster. And I liked it. Rambo just looks over, like, kind of just not even at him, just kind of turns his eyes like, dude, whatever. And they're just kind of thinking he's just this old, you know, middle-aged boatman. And I was like, this guy could rip your throats out in a heartbeat.
Yes.
Oh wait. Oh yeah. There is a throat rip scene that makes that would make Patrick Swayze jump.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Forgot about that too. I was like, oh.
Well, yeah. You're talking about the mercenaries. Like, of course, Schoolboy is the one that gets all the lines because Matthew Marsden's got charisma for days. And you could do. We need to call Lindsay on Schlock and all, because you could do a Matthew Marsden in the Jungle duo with this and Anaconda's Hunt for the Blood Orchid, because he's in both of them doing basically the same thing. With one, he's got a gun. One, he's got a, you know, a science kit with him or whatever. But he's up to no good either way. But I love that guy because, again, he gives off that like, kind of Euro trash. Like, I'm really not in the army, but I'm going to be cool and be in the army, you know, moment. And he's fun. And then the other two guys, just one, just you have to have a badass Asian type. So that's in you. And then you knew one guy who's drinking all the time. So that's the other guy. And then the white boy blues singer who's like, I don't know, David Allen Coe's, you know, adopted nephew or something. I don't know what he's got going on there, but it's like, his whole Hank Williams III thing is sort of over the top. But but you juxtapose those against those missionaries, like you say, and there's really only two of them that ever get any lines. It's Sarah and Michael. And you see how Rambo looks at Michael as like, man, you don't really know what you're talking about, you know, whatever. But this woman here seems to really like, there's like some good in her. There's some things going on. And I actually don't think he's necessarily like attracted to her as much as he's just attracted to the fact that she's so sincere, like you said. And I appreciate that. Can I tell you? Because when they try to do the romance in Rambo Part 2, that's the part of that movie that doesn't work. I'm like, look, I know he's been in prison a long time, but let's not do that here too. Okay.
I like it. It works for me.
I mean, everybody's got to have a stand for Co. I get it. It's cool.
Well, I'm especially glad at this point in, you know, you have Rambo where he is. And this nice, sweet missionary, Sarah, if they tried to make that a love connection, it would just be laughable.
Be very weird. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all these people are mid-30s to 40s too. And I'm like, I love it. There's no random kid. There's no, you know, Short Round. We're not doing none of that. You know, nothing to get Short Round, but we're not doing any of that.
They probably would have killed him in this movie.
Thrown into a fire. Short Round's getting drafted.
They would have stabbed him and then thrown him into a fire and then shot him with a freaking 50 cal.
Major Patti Tent is dragging him into his quarters and then into the army. That's what's happening to Short Round in this movie. But but the pirate attack though is one of those moments when you're like, I mean, Rambo, the way he looks at those people around, it is a little RoboCop-ish. It's like target. You got your hand down on the like, and it's purposeful though. Like the camera works great because you notice all these dudes are slacking. They don't have their hands on the trigger. Mm-hmm. They're not doing good trigger discipline. They don't have their hands on the guns. And Rambo's like, well, I can take all these dudes out real quick. And then he just splays the boat. And when he executes that other dude, it's just the horror on everybody's face. He's like, where the hell did y'all think y'all were coming? Disneyland? Yeah.
Somebody yells for him not to shoot him, right? And then he just blows a hole through his head. It's like,
I love this. I love this because, you know, obviously Rambo has been out here on the river in Thailand for we don't even know how long. And so he at first tried to reason. He tried to negotiate. Mm-hmm. He's dealt with pirates before. He doesn't go straight to killing. But he is. He's hyper-vigilant, and he's sizing it up and kind of making these tactical calculations. How many of these guys can I take out?
Yeah.
And as soon as they come after the woman on board, he's like, no, it's done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, she wisely puts that hat on, too. So she had been coached clearly, like, you need to hide your identity if you get around any hostile folks. So and that's just a little subtle thing. But I'm like, yeah. Now, again, in the hands of a lesser script, she wouldn't know to do that. But that's right. It. They don't have to call it out. They don't explain it for 10 minutes. You don't see the scene of her in the classroom talking about it back at the mega church. You know, she just puts the hat on, you know, but I appreciate that efficiency. And then again, the way he just dispatches with them,
the reactions of the missionaries, you know, mm-hmm. and that guy, Michael, I think one of the reasons why Michael is not able to persuade Rambo to do anything is that Michael's real judgy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Slightly.
Rambo's had enough judgment in his life. He got spit on and called baby killer. And so for this churchy doctor missionary guy to be judging him, to be calling him out, is like, he doesn't have time for that.
No.
He doesn't have time for the judgment. And that guy right away is like, you think you did right? You know, taking a life is never right. It's like, Rambo doesn't do it because he thinks it's right. Rambo does it for survival.
Right.
Rambo does it to protect other people's lives.
Yeah, I got a question for the room. Who the fuck is Michael going to report Rambo to for killing that guy?
Oh my gosh, when he said that, I about laughed out loud.
I mean, because someone's look is like, do you want the yellow pages?
Yeah, I don't know what he's thinking about. I
report me to your pastor back home. Go right ahead, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guess I won't be making it to Easter service next year. That's the one line I was like, I mean, he basically says to him, like, we're going to take a different way back. And he said, because we can't go back with you. You're too violent. Like, if he said that, I would have bought that better than I'm going to have to report you to the authorities. There are no authorities. That's why this place
I'll
sucks.
Report you. Like, what are you talking about? I was going to say the missionaries kind of drive me insane, but really it's just Michael who drives. Like, he annoys me because he's so, like, it's like the prototypical thing you would think of, like, a real uppity Christian type person who are really mm-hmm. judgy. Thinks they're right all the time, like their way or the highway, but nobody else even hardly speaks, and no one else, he's just him. He's just so over the top with, like, thinks he knows what to do, clearly has no idea, but is, like, very judgy. It's
and the rest of them, you actually see them doing good, too.
Go ahead. Right, yeah.
I'm sorry, Matt. There's also an air about Michael that he's doing this for the recognition that comes mm-hmm. with it and not mm-hmm. just purely from a good standpoint, which is, again, why Rambo doesn't gel with him right away. He sees through that. And then when the woman comes up to him, he's like has been stated, he sees that it's she actually means it. Mm-hmm. Whereas every time Michael talks, I'm just like, dude, you just like to hear yourself talk. Shut up.
Yeah.
You're a doctor. Just fix things. Don't tell people everything. And it's like, ugh. And there is a part later when he gets hit in the head with a reed or a stick where I was like, secretly, I was like, yes.
You don't necessarily want him to die. You just kind of want him to get shunted a little bit.
Yeah.
Humble.
He's also that
light beating.
Yes. And he's also that character that even though there's a somebody who's lived there for an undisclosed amount of time who hasn't been killed, who mm-hmm. knows pirates and knows people and has survived here. The fact that you don't take anything he has to say into account whatsoever, again, shows me how pompous and dumb you really are. And mm-hmm. again, that's something else Rambo looks at and goes, all right, you're not here for the right reasons, clearly. So, all right, whatever. And that's why he doesn't listen to him. And I'm like, and afterwards when he just kind of waves at him, there's a part of me, I'm like, yeah, that's basically the only thing Michael can go, you were right, I was wrong, I'm sorry.
Yes. Also, you see how I killed that guy with a rock? They're pretty good. we got to talk about Potty Tent, though, for a minute, because I didn't realize this time. The guy who played this was a Karen rebel in his earlier days and had survived this. Really? So he was afraid of, like, if I do this, my family's going to get hunted by these people in Burma. And they had to, like, get them somewhere else, you know, into Thailand or something like that. Mm. Because he wanted to do it because he said, no, he said, everything I'm doing, he said, I know people think it's over the top. He said, it happens. He said, that is exactly right. And because I thought, man, they just made this guy like a child molester just to make him even more contemptible. And I was like, no, that's real. And I was like, oh, shit, that's even dark. And this, what you said earlier, Carmelita, it's like Stallone went back to the source and said, let's kind of strip away the all the caricature stuff. And let's just get down to, we want to have a badass action movie, but it's got to be rooted in some real psychology. And I appreciated that. And every time I rewatch this, I appreciate that level of detail about it. But learning that that guy had actually lived through this stuff was just kind of wild.
Very.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's incredible.
I just want to know, it's not a deleted scene, but I want y'all to just to imagine the church pastor going into his deaconship or elders. Well, I don't know what churches y'all grew up in, but there's a council of people that control the money and these things, and going, I need about, I don't know, $200,000 to hire some mercenaries to go get our missionaries back. Like, I mean, selling a roof to a church sometimes is hard. I can't imagine
selling, you know, mercs.
Yeah. Like, how does one just know to get Mercs Are Us? Like, do you have a magazine?
I think he says the embassy directed him to some mercenaries,
which is also fucked
which
up.
Is like, wait, what? It's like, did they? A lot of stuff that pastor says, I blacked out. I forgot there was a whole mercenary team with Rambo. I remembered it just being Rambo. Because they don't do much, honestly. Schoolboy is the only one who, when I was like, oh, he really stood out. The other guys like just disappear into the background. But yeah, when that pastor shows up, like everything that seems like, wait, what? Okay, he went and got money. How big is this church? It's like a Joel Osteen church.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And then you came here to find them, and then the U.S. embassy was like, hey, we can't help, but we do know some people, so go hire some mercenaries. It's like the
operators like, wow, in this side of the world. Well, I mean, in my head, I just, you know, knowing geopolitics a little bit of stuff, I'm like, they just gave him like the phone number to like, you know, Cheney's friends, you know, or whatever. Like, call these dudes. Yeah, Halliburton. Like, just call those guys. Like, yeah, they'll take care of it. And they called John Krasinski. He's like, I'm a little busy right now, but I know some dudes. And you know, that's really, you know, and sadly, that's right, how the world works, kids. But I mean, but I like the shorthand of it, because I had forgotten the thing too. I was like, no, wait a minute, how does this all go down? So they capture all the missionaries and they put them through absolute hell. They feed one to the damn boars, which is, I was like, oh, we went Hannibal. Oh, I had forgotten that. That's messed up, especially because he seemed like the super nice one of all of them. I was like, oh man, that sucks.
You looked up, Jay.
Wait a minute. I'm always the super nice one. I'm going to get fed to boars if we all get captured. Right? I start being meaner to people.
I know. I'm like, no eye contact.
Eye contact.
Yeah. Don't look at anybody. Never, well, I mean, no. And Rambo even says that. He's like, don't look at anybody. Don't look them in the eye. And even when he's talking to the guys, he's looking down and away from them when he's talking to them. He knows like that. But I love that. But it's almost like, and I think Rambo has a line about like how we're just animals, you know, and that's the thing they say when you get, you know, get a dangerous animal looking at you, don't look at it, because then it's going to be like, oh, really? You want to go? And that's what happens, you know. Yeah. And I had forgotten that about this and the way that they go down. And then we get our second boat ride with, where, like I said, we get the Merc introductions for uselessness, because they're worthless. This is maybe one of the worthless bands of dudes. He might as well have been by himself, Matt. So it's like a it's like having a Survivor series where you got three guys that just go over the top rope and die, you know. It's against the world. Well, fine then, I'll do it all.
They're so, real jobbers of mercenary.
Yeah, they are complete
jobber squad.
Complete Barry Horror, which is every damn one.
They're the Brooklyn Brawlers of mercenaries.
Yes.
How many more wrestling?
Contrast, right?
Yeah.
This is the contrast. The mercenaries, it's a job. Like, if they were doing mall security, you know what I mean? It's like the same mentality. Yes. Clock in, do your shift, get out. I'm not going to do any more work than I have to. I'm not going to put myself in any more danger than I have to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even look at like what they, all they've got is what's on them. Is like, who's got explosives? I have a claymore. I have some plastic. Right. Okay, great. It was like, you guys didn't even like plan.
Yeah.
It's like the four of you got thrown together. It's like, okay, I guess we're on this team now. So,
this is a job to them. Mm-hmm. They're just in it for the money. And it ends up being that contrast with Rambo.
Yeah.
Rambo is, this has become who he is. Like, he's in it for life.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Exactly. You know? So I think we're at the part where we could talk about where Rambo goes absolutely unchained at this moment and gets full Wolverine, because it is some of the best 25 minutes of action I think has ever been put to cinema. I'm just going to put that down on the table now. This is, of American action movies, it's hard to think of one of the last 20 years that's hit it as hard as this one does for 25 minutes. Andy, you're the expert in the room for that. Am I off the line?
Oh man, Daniel, you just happened to misspeak and say action guy instead of like the action guy when you don't mean to, and you're labeled forever. You are definitely correct, and it's more of the spectacle in this one. It's not like it's a great, you know, fight scene that's, you know, got intricate fight moves and, you know, choreography and camera work. It's all about the savagery of it, and it starts, like we said, when, if I may go back real quick, the first time the mercs are watching them make the people run back and forth again. And when they run through and the bad guys are mad that they didn't step on any of the landmines. So they make them run back the other way. Mm-hmm. And those guys are like, we're not doing anything. Rambo just starts shooting them with his bow and arrow. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, the arrow through the chest. And then the one through the face, I was like,
yeah,
oh, we're back, baby. Cause that's the one thing growing up, I was like, every time Rambo used the bow, Rambo Part Two, those arrow tips that are explosives.
Yes.
That sound effect, that my favorite sound effect in any action movie ever. And I don't care if it's fake. I want to hear every bow sound like that. The fact that this one doesn't, I'm a little upset, but he's back using that, and it's smart because it's quiet, so it doesn't draw attention to you. But he does shoot a guy in the head, which sends him into a landmine, which blows up. Then he rips the guy's throat out to save him. Then he shows how smart he is when when they realize that they're being tracked, and he rips off part of her shirt, ties it to his shoe, and runs the opposite direction, blows everything up. And then you're right. He hacks that dude's head off, and then point blank range shoots the guy and sitting in the driver's seat of the Jeep, just the guy just obliterates into nothing.
Yes.
And everything's on the front of it. And Rambo's all just like wiping his face off, and then just literally just turns and just,
before we get to the 50 cal, cause that's the crescendo of it. I want to pinpoint on that, all the things he does up to that. And this is what I found was so neat this time. Rambo was trained as a special forces operative, all this stuff, but through years and through his incursions, and then through all that happened to him when he was in Washington, and then everything else has happened, he's become a guerrilla warfighting expert.
Yes.
So it's all about environment and opportunity. Come across an old bomb that didn't go off, that got dropped. Give me that claymore. Give me that piece of her shirt. We'll lead the dogs right here. Son of a bitch will pull it up out of the ground. He'll pull the pin, and that'll be it. Because these guys are stupid. And that's what he knows. But he's not wrong, because he leads them on the, it's like a little Billy map on some ways. Yeah. He leads them on this just trap of destruction all across that island. And I love it, though, because it's like you're sitting there watching this going like, this isn't the first time Rambo's sneaked in and out of there for something. You can tell. He's like, I need a python. Okay, well, there's only one place those are, so we're gonna be real quiet today. But he knows how to, and I love that he is in that element, and the way he pulls all those other people out, and he gets Sarah out. That's the big thing. That's his prime. Like, everybody else, okay, sorry. But he's gonna get her out because she's the idealistic one, right? And tagging her up with Schoolboy makes sense because he's apparently the only one that can actually shoot anybody.
Right. Yeah.
they get a little bit at the end. Yeah. They get a little bit at the end where they get to shoot a few people. But I do love, Andy, you're talking about the bow and arrow. When he has that face off with Graham McTavish and he hits the bow at him, I'm like, bro, if he let that go, it's going straight through his face. The best part is that Graham McTavish is like, I give zero fucks if you're pointing that at me right now. Like, he does not care. And I'm like, I will give him credit for never backing down. He was an asshole from the beginning, and he was at the end. It's very Vasquez of him from Aliens. He's like, whatever, I'm the biggest badass in the world. So
but there is that moment after Rambo gives the line, which I will say later when we do our best Rambo impersonation, where there's like a look in Graham's eyes where he's just like, oh, remember when I called this guy just a lowly boatman? He's like, oh yeah, this guy is as badass as I think.
He is the boatman. Yeah. He's the boatman of the River Styx.
taking people to death.
Yeah.
Who are you, boatman?
Yeah.
Right? Like, who the fuck is this guy?
I mean, it's some Clint Eastwood, Pale Rider, revenge shit on tilt. And I'm here for all of it, though, because, again, we've set up the most contemptible enemies ever, and they're virtually faceless, so they should lose their faces in incredible fashion. And then we're just going to lay them down.
And their throats.
Right. And the fact that it seems like it's going south, like, right? Like, everybody's getting captured. Schoolboy's got Sarah. Like, we can't do nothing. You know, we can't do that. We give our position away. We're dead. We can't do nothing. And he's not wrong. He is exactly right. Like, don't shoot. They shoot. You'll know right where we are. And so they're about to watch both of their sets of friends get executed. And the way Rambo fucking Michael Myers is up.
Oh my God.
Dude.
Oh, amazing shot.
Yes, I was like, hell yeah. I was like, Dean Cundey, eat your heart out, baby. That is some good shit. And then, like I say, decapitates that guy and then lays waste. That is some of the, it's like, that's when you have reached the crescendo in the ladder match. We're like, oh hell, it's on now. Like, everybody is on 100 watts. And we joke about the fact that, you know, it's unlimited ammo. He actually does unload it just for another cache of unlimited ammo. It's the most God mode moment in a video game you've ever seen, where he is just splicing dudes. And I'm trying to think, have I ever seen that done in another American action movie to this extent, where there's that much carnage in this amount of time? And I can't think of one. Can any of y'all?
No, I don't think so.
It's extreme. Yeah.
Like, Carmen, they talked about RoboCop a while ago on the show. That's a super violent movie, but it comes in bursts. This is like sustained, like, insane violence for like 20 minutes or something. Like, it just doesn't stop. It's incredible.
This is the Ed 209 shooting that lackey guy for 20 minutes straight.
Or the only thing I thought of was in T2, when Arnie decides to go out there and just shoot up all the cop cars without killing anybody, but he doesn't kill anybody. Right. So the point of that is, like, he could do that without killing anybody, but that's a lot of violence at once. But it's not the same level, because Rambo is laying these people into the earth. Like, they are done.
Bodies are literally splitting in half from 50 kills ripping through them.
This may be Stallone being Stallone a little bit, but he said, how are these soldiers telling me that's what it looks like when a bullet hits you? And I'm like, well, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's a hell of an endorsement to get. So I did find out though that the gun sounds like Stallone was a stickler. He's like, no, it's got to sound like the real gun. And so what you hear is what that gun sounds like in that environment with that open canopy and stuff, which is pretty cool. And I don't know. I thought that was neat. And even the military guys that were talking about it said, that's what that 50 cal sounds like when you just let it rip like that. He said, now, one thing to know is the barrel's going to be red at the end of that. Yeah.
So hot.
So he said, you can't really keep it going that long without it melting. He said, at some point, it's going to start to just droop because it's so hot.
I'm actually shocked that somebody didn't come running up. He just turned the barrel into him and singed their face off.
Yeah, right. Yeah, just melt them down. Might as well have, right? But no, I look all of that stuff, and then everybody gets loose, right? The mercs get loose, and then Grim McTavish headbutts somebody into hell. I was like, oh yeah, there we go. And then we start shooting people. Of course, one guy gets killed, other guy gets killed, but they actually get their moments. You know, they get to do some stuff. But it's when Michael grabs the rock to save that mercenary. That's when I was like, wow, we have turned it. When he goes back home, that guy is going to be in therapy forever. Like, not make fun of that, but I mean, like, wow, that guy is not equipped to handle that at all.
It's such a good build up to the sequence too. Like, it's like my favorite thing in an action movie when kind of like the quiet moments, but build up to the big action. It's almost like in a song, like, when the music drops down or drops out and it comes back bigger, that's what this feels like. It's like such a quiet moment. All hope is lost type of moment. Then the hero comes in and saves everything. It's so good. Someone's really good at that in the whole movie, because the boat sequences too, when it, like, the tension, the build up, him shooting those guys and the build up to him getting on this 50 cal and, like, And then it just unleashes. And that's, I was just like screaming. Like when he cuts the guy's head off clean. And then when he just obliterates that guy in the driver's seat,
melts
he's
him.
Like, melts him. He's not even like a person anymore.
There's nothing like, left.
Yeah. This really reminds you of like, oh yeah, we're just big bags of like meat and bones and blood and organs. Cause it's just like, it's like Cronenberg. It's like this
is like flesh burns. Well, it's body almost, horror. It's almost as violent. It's a different kind of violence. But if y'all remember, really the crescendo battle in Conan the Barbarian, when Conan sets up all
do we remember it?
Talking like the two biggest Conan fans.
Yes. But I mean, really, y'all remember like the way that went down, how gory and bloody it was, and it's all swords and stuff. But I thought, I know, you know, him and Arnie have a friendly rivalry, but I was like, hey, watch this. You know, and it just went even more with it because, and that's one of the things about Conan and the Destroyers, they made Conan do that with a bunch of mirrors, which kind of sucked. But, you know, but still, that is a bloody fight. You know, Game of Thrones would go with these bloody big fights and things like that. And I feel like a lot of the anything after this is has to go back to this point and go like, well, can we top that? Probably not, without looking like we're cheaping out on it or, you know, parodying it. And, you know, $50 million for a movie is not a lot, y'all. And for the amount of effects in this movie, it's really not a lot. So they got a lot out of, again, that CGI and all the practical mix that they did here, because it's a mix of both. And
yeah, I think this is where most of that budget had to have gone to is this whole sequence. Sure. Like,
he'll never cop to it. I just wonder if this was the first thing he wrote. It's like, I don't know, but somewhere in the end of this, I just have to mow down a whole army of people because that's what everybody says I can do. So eat shit, Chuck Norris.
It's like, yeah, it keeps like somehow like upping it because it just keeps going. Like, schoolboy jumps in. And he's shooting guys in a boat and their heads are getting blown clean off. Like, and then the body's just left standing the gun. It's like, it's just so like, it's to a point where you just have to laugh. It's so ludicrous. Cause I mean, I think we all love that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I know people will think I'm insane for laughing at this kind of violence, but I'm like, it just makes me like,
you made the musical comparison and it's like the solo, the ending jam solo out in Metallica's One. By the time they get to that point, man, it's everybody except Jason Newsted. Apparently it's just off the frigging chain. You will never know what great things he played, but everybody was just, you know, on a different level, you know, and it just kept going and going and going. And it's like, how does it keep doing? And that is an art that is hard to do without making it seem too choreographed and too spectacle, you know. And I'm not digging on those. I love, you know, the choreographed action movie scene and all that stuff, but I'm just saying this one is so raw that it's amazing. It keeps that tempo rising all the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's absolutely
spectacular. It's so good.
It really is.
What about the end, though, when we disembowel the main leader? Is there any other way that guy had to go down?
Nope. That guy couldn't just be a random. Yeah.
No, he couldn't just be,
you know, exploded. No. Yeah, it had to be that way.
It still felt like he got off too easy because he was so awful. Like, and he had to be like tortured and then killed. I don't know.
He disemboweled him and kicked him down to the hill.
I need more.
What do you want to do? Take a pistol?
House arrest on top of the body.
Needs more justice.
Matt needs him to grab the both of his jaws and split his head and just rip him in half from top to bottom.
Do Rambo atomic breath straight down the gullet. I mean, he more or less does. I mean, the fact that he you know gives him the full L straight up.
Yeah.
I got to give that actor credit too. The look on his face that's the look you should have when you run into a fucking machete that the guy wielded yesterday. So. No. So Carmelita, as the Rambo fangirl, though, is this like the most Rambo kill of the whole movie?
Oh.
The knife kill?
I mean, yeah, probably. I think my favorite is still the throat.
The throat rip?
Oh, yeah.
That might be my favorite. Well, see, no, it's hard to say because, yeah, when he comes up and takes over the 50 cal, I don't know. But yeah, something about. No, I think it is the most Rambo kill because, I mean, the machete standing for the knife. There's always a Rambo knife, some kind. But it's Rambo loves to confront
face to face
the wrong ones. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
he always does. He
it's like when he leans up in two and shoots Victor Maitland with a rocket.
Yes, yeah, he likes that confrontation. Like he's gonna confront the wrong.
Yeah.
And so that's very Rambo.
Yeah, no, and not from far away too. It's like a close, personal, like you did intimate this to killer. Them, and then like give it a minute before you disembowel. It's not just a quick one. It is slow, mm-hmm. and that look, and then the way that the Rambo music kind of kicks in, the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. I'm like, yes, do it.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. so something just occurred to me as you were saying that. I'd never thought about it before. When he hits him with the knife and he comes in front of him, he looks him dead eye to eye. As we were talking about, he wouldn't make eye contact with anybody. He wanted him to know he's mm-hmm. going to do the ultimate disrespect as he cuts him in half, more or less. It's like, wow, that's pretty strong.
Rambo.
Yeah, it's Rambo. You'll never convince me Danny McBride didn't totally rip this off when Michael Myers came out of that house in Halloween Kills and just laid down the entire Haddonfield Fire Department, you know? I mean, that and a lot of Jason movies, but still, whatever. You draw your inspiration where you get it. But, you know, we've all seen the Gauntlet match go a lot of different ways, and this was more fitting. But no, I love how it's just this gore. And then there's that moment where they're putting in that quiet Rambo music, the theme, you know, from First Blood.
Yeah.
It's always seemed so odd to still use in sequels, but we're going to lace it through because it's known. And you just see the devastation everywhere. And I think you called it out, Andy, where Michael's just like, okay, thanks, man. My bad.
He was like, sometimes murder is the answer. You were right, Rambo.
Hey, violence does solve some problems.
You're welcome back at Easter anytime. or whatever. God. But yeah, but this, what can he say at that point? It's been right. But it's a good thing. And I honestly thought, like, if they just cut it right there, that we're good, right? But the fact that they take the time to have him walking down that road in Arizona, because he's talked about, you know, father may still be there, don't know, you know, that ranch and stuff like that, that he got it together enough to get all the way back, you know, through the West Coast, through everything, and get through. That's pretty, I don't know, it was a neat way, because I know what had been said, that this wasn't going to be the last Rambo movie, but I was like, you know, if it was, that's kind of a good way to end, that he actually can come home and have some bit of peace, you know?
Well, try, be willing to try.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. When we first see him in the very first movie, that's where he's headed. He's walking home.
Yeah.
And now 40 years later, he finally gets there. So this movie should have ended it there, or this franchise, because that's like the perfect character ending, in my humble opinion. But, you know, I'm glad Matt likes the other one. Okay.
As much as I like Last Blood, that is the perfect ending for the character. Like, truly. Yeah. Like, I almost wish Last Blood... I don't want to say they wish it didn't exist, but like that, any Rambo,
make
so
it a different
perfect.
Character. It doesn't have to be a Rambo movie. It could have
old man playing some other stuff.
It's kind of like The Last Stand that Schwarzenegger did when he was that sheriff of the Mexican. Mm-hmm. It's like he didn't need to be any of his other characters. He could just be him, and that was perfect. And I was there for that. I same way that Last Blood could have just been called something else, Last Stand, I guess we already did that, but you know, it could have been something else. But yeah,
it's just, it is the perfect ending for the character. I do love that ending. I just kind of, but I like Last Blood, but you know, it's like, well, kind of, yeah,
I like parts of it.
I enjoyed it, I did. And at the end, when they did the Rambo across the decades,
that
mm-hmm.
is good.
I got teary eyed, friends.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Weird witchy goth middle-aged goth woman sitting by herself in the movie theater at Last Blood with tears in her eyes,
little sniffles going. I'm also sort of picturing this and going like, I wish there was photographic evidence of this, having known you as long as I have. So because I'm like, well, this would have that's what got it. Okay, cool. So, I mean, I'm there. It's cool. So that's the fun part. So, we've been doing this thing on Filmstore. We kind of play with our formula a little bit about rewrite or recast any of it. I wouldn't touch any of this, man. I don't know about y'all. I think everybody's perfect in it and everything works well. Andy, you've got one, though, I think.
Only one criticism is I miss the Rambo scene where somebody like Troutman gets to talk about how he'd eat billy goats for, you know, or you know, just kind of talk. And then like the whole capstone go, you know, well, you know, what should we have then? A good supply of body bags, something like that is the only Rambo piece missing. Cause even in First Blood, you still get that where Troutman's building him up to show how awesome he is. And that's my only criticism, is there's not, before those like mercs meet up with him or something, like somebody just talks about the epicness that is Rambo. That's the only thing I would change.
And that's why they did splice in Richard Crenna and stuff, because the studio wanted him to recast him. And Stallone said, as far as I'm concerned, Troutman died when Richard Crenna died. Then he said, nobody else can do it. And so, but it would have been neat to have somebody like, it would, if we had one scene where that pastor again arrives over here and they go like, that guy, but if you put him on this, be aware of what you're about to get, you know, or whatever. And so, yeah, that would have been cool. Matt, Carmelita, what about you guys?
I can't really think of anything. Yeah. Maybe Michael, the judgy doctor missionary. Maybe somebody more. Yeah, maybe not. Maybe I didn't like that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Because if you get somebody that's a little more handsome and charming, and not to talk about looks, but it plays into that whole why is this guy here thing? He doesn't quite match up. Mm-hmm. And it would make it more smug, like a Billy Magnuson face, like when you want to punch.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Somebody like that.
And Michael, I don't care. Michael's a lampshade in the movie. He's just there.
Right.
He looks like that annoying guy at The Office. That you have to work with, which is pretty much like, what he played on 24 too. It's like if he asked me one more time about the damn cover sheet on my TPS reports, I swear, you know, he's that guy. Oh man, okay, give me Gary Cole in that role, please. Let Lundberg be that. Love Gary Cole, and that would have been awesome.
Yes, because
he can play a smug jerk too, and it would have been great. I've met him. He's actually a very, very nice person. But also could also believe that Julie Benz would be attracted to him and not Paul Schultz. Sorry. So, I'm like, she's had Dexter and Angel, bro. Like you're way down the list.
So. I can't think of anything. It's such a tightly constructed movie. I like it's so tightly put together. It doesn't have a lot of fat on it. I could probably maybe recast some people because some people don't pop. The only people that pop, I feel like, are like Rambo, Schoolboy, and Julie Benz's character. Like everybody else kind of, even the bad guys like look cool. They don't do hardly anything. They just do, I mean, they do horrible things, but like they don't have much interaction with anybody else. But I think it almost feels the point of the mercenaries is not to be too badass, because then Rambo has to come in and be more badass than them. You know, they can't be too cool, you know. There's a little bit of dialogue in the beginning. It's like they kind of like on the nose about like the world being bad and the world being good. Like, you know, it's a little bit like, but it's again, it's like it's very tight. So it's like we're just trying to get the main points across really quickly. But very minor nitpicks. I would not do much change Rambo. It's a very fun, insanely violent movie.
I agree. Well, we've reached the part here where we're going to do we've been doing Shatner impressions because I've got this sort of running Star Trek series, but we're going to let Bill have a week off. I think we got to take a line. I want to hear your best Stallone line readings from this movie. So, Carmelita, we're going to let you go first, please.
Oh, God. Yes, let me go first because hopefully people will forget what it sounded like after the rest of you go. I love when people do impressions. And I think the reason why I love it is because I can't do it. So this is going to be subpar. That's fine. I don't have to be good at everything.
It's okay.
Okay. I should like put like marbles in my mouth or something. Marbles. Filthy. Fuck the world.
That's pretty solid.
Not bad.
Not bad.
That's pretty good. Bad. That's right on board. All right, Andy, what about really you, tried. Man?
All right, so we'll set the scene. It's right after he's used his bow, and he's and it's that scene where Graham McTavish walks up and he puts the bow right in his face, and he just looks at him and he goes, "Live for nothing, or die for something." Good. I love that line.
Good.
That's totally Rambo in this. Like he was living for literally nothing, and now he sees that Julie Benz's character is willing to die for something she believes, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I used to be that way too. We should do that." So, yep, there you go.
I like it. Very good, Matt. What do you got?
Okay, quick side story for this. I'm sorry. You know it's me. I have to have tangents. Okay, so in 2008, after this came out,
Did you go to this set too, Matt? Is that what's going to happen? Or do you have a shirt or something?
No, I did not. This set sounds scary from the IMDb trivia.
Yeah, it really does.
Malone said he was scared for his life. That makes me
They're getting shot at on set.
It's insane. So I this is the weird time that I was married. And I was married to, I know.
I always forget this.
I forget it too, Andy. I try to forget, but she was in the Navy, and guess where the Navy sent her in the summer of 2008?
No.
Overseas to Thailand. They went to Japan. And there was a running joke she told me on the boat with everybody, because Rambo would come out and there was a big line of trailers where everybody would turn to each other and they go, Burma's a war zone. So, because that line just sticks in my head. I did my best. I feel like my Stallone and my Vin Diesel are very close. It's just kind of like, especially in this movie, he's very like Vin Diesel-y, like when he's like, fuck the world. Like, it's just.
Yeah. It's all about family.
Yeah. So, yeah, Burma.
Marble Mouth.
Burma's a war zone.
Carmelita hit it.
Burma's a war zone. It's just burned into my brain forever. And she did say, she was like, Burma's really fucked up right now. So they were like, Burma was legitimately a war zone.
Myanmar is not exactly on the chill vibes.
Not the chill
tour,
vibes.
As we said.
That's a great line. Yeah. Not the chill vibes travel guide.
That is not going to be there. So, that was an excellent, excellent set of Stallone impressions, Case. I really appreciate y'all playing along and doing that. But we've reached the part of the podcast where it's time to give final thoughts and popcorn ratings. So for those that may be new to the show, we rate everything on a popcorn scale. The bigger the corn, the more you like it. You can add any modifiers to it you like. So Andy, let's start with you.
Oh, shit. Extra large with butter on this baby. Kimmy, you kidding me? This is a 5-star movie if under the Matt Bledsoe ratings. So it is a extra large popcorn bucket for Andy.
Nice, nice.
This ain't Matt? No 4.5 bullshit. No, this is 5-star, baby.
No.
You know what? Extra large popcorn, especially if you're going to the movie theater for an action movie, because it's you know, this is about as good as you want a big violent action movie. Extra large popcorn, extra butter. Let's go. Put it all on there.
Carmelita.
This is an extra large with butter, nice and fresh. And if you guys would allow me, I want to add in a big gulp of sweetened iced tea in memory of my uncle.
Yes.
Ramiro Taco Valdez, Marine, who served in Vietnam and first introduced us to Rambo. This one's for you, Theo.
That's awesome.
Miss you.
That's awesome. Very nice.
That is awesome. Look, extra large popcorn with butter with layered in little mini marshmallows to shake the bag up, get a little gooey goodness. All your salty, savory sweetness, because this movie is all of that in one, in 90 minutes of slaughter. I know the tagline of this movie is live for something or die for nothing. It should be, no, get ready for 90 minutes of slaughter, because it is everything you want in a Rambo movie, in a Rambo sequel, I will say. It's all the best fun things that 2 and 3 wanted to do, but with the psychological underpinning parts that they missed out on. And didn't get and didn't work in those movies. Those movies are fine, but they don't hit the way the first one does, and definitely the way this one does. And again, the cast are mostly kind of forgettable, but they don't need to be terribly memorable because you really only need to know 4 people the whole time. Rambo, the Major Bhatti Tent. All right, so we got our 2 evil villains, and then the people in between. Sarah and her escort Eurotrash friend schoolboy, and that's all you need. Everybody else is just kind of, they're just there to be site decoration, and literally sometimes, because some of these people were there to stand there until they turned into squib mush, but that's the fun part of it. And again, it's hard to find an American action movie that can keep the tension rolling for 25 minutes straight without it looking like, God, how long did it take them to set all that up? And it took them weeks to set this up too, but it doesn't look like it. It looks raw. It looks gritty. It looks nasty. And that's what I like about it. It's gritty. It's fun. And it's a blast. So if you haven't seen it, well, spoilers hot, but so I hope you figured that out.
Go watch Rambo 4.
Yeah, exactly. Go watch that. Own this. This is definitely one to revisit. And I actually did the thing. I watched this and then I went and watched First Blood. after this because I thought, let me just see if my inclination is right. And I was like, oh yeah, they definitely went back home on this one. And it's a good thing. Sometimes you can go back to a good property and it works. And Last Blood was a one-time watch. I'll give it another shot because two of you are really putting it over. But in my mind, Rambo walked into his dad's ranch and was like, where the hell have you been? You know, and that was the conversation they had. And he just worked on some horses the rest of his life. And I'm okay with that because he deserved that. So after all that he'd done. So, but I want to tell y'all, I did not deserve the treat that y'all gave me by coming on and doing this show. So I really appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you for doing this. Please tell folks where they can find you and follow all the great work you are doing. Matt, let's start with you.
Oh, okay. So, Film Feast podcast comes out almost every Monday, weekly. And I have great guests like all of you people here have been on the show at one point or another. So and we just talk about movies. So you can find that anywhere you get podcasts. You can follow it on Twitter at Film Feast Pod. Follow me at MattBled87. Follow me on Instagram, Film Feast, all one word. I think that's it. Yeah. So,
Andy, how about you?
Okay. Star Wars podcast that I do with Chris and Mark, Imperial Scum comes out. We try to go monthly just because with schedules and Mark's got little kids and everything with Chris's work, we're trying to do more, but we have a great time there. You can follow that on Twitter at Scum Imperial. It's backwards. You can follow me on all of them. I literally made it super easy. It's just Andrew M. Gorham. Like I always say, look for the giant nerd grinning like an idiot surrounded by droids, and you found me. So thank you.
And Carmelita, how about you?
I'm on Twitter, kind of on Blue Sky, and on Letterboxd, same handle for everything, at Carmelita Says.
Absolutely. Follow all of these people on the social medias and their Letterboxd as well. You'll have a good time and follow those shows because you will be on always on for a good conversation. You never know what it might lead you to. Again, I'm listening to a Film Feast episode, cooking dinner, going, I got to figure out how to get these people. This is too much fun, this trio here. So we will have to reconvene this at some point down the line too, to talk about something else, gang. But really, thank you again for coming and being a part of this show today. Really appreciate it. Of course, folks, you can follow this show's social media at Filmstrip Pod everywhere. You know, there's social media. We're out there, and you can find our show everywhere there are pods to be casted. We're there. We're almost 400 deep now. 14 years in, there's probably something for you in the archives. If you liked a popular movie in the last 50 years, I'm sure we've covered it at one time or another and usually having a good time with it like this. So tell other folks about the show, share it on your social as well. We appreciate the support. So until next time, thank you for listening to Filmstrip.
Thank you for listening to Filmstrip. You can find more episodes on our website, filmstrippodcast.com. The Filmstrip theme music is produced and performed by Frozen Lake 121. All content used or discussed in these podcast episodes is the property of the respective owners and used under the Fair Use Act, Section 504(c)(2), Title 17.